Okay, final hour with our special guest, John Kachuba, as we talk about his work and his websites, which are linked up at coasttocoastam.com. And we'll take your stories, questions, and hauntings on Coast to Coast AM. So, John, what drives you? You keep doing this. You keep going to haunted locations. What are you looking for?
The mystery of life, the meaning of life, right? I don't know. It is an ongoing quest, but I just think I'm very interested in all the reasons as to why we're here, what our mission is supposed to be, and I think that part of that ties right into the afterlife. You know, we're supposed to be doing something here for a purpose, and I think that purpose continues. So I'm just trying to find out what that's all about, what it means. It's a big question. It's just a big question. Hard to get your head around it.
Once you get that answer that you're looking for, is it going to change your life?
Well, I think it already has. I mean, I think just the quest that I've been on the last several years has changed my life. I think I've gotten much more involved in other areas of spirituality, other areas of actually even metaphysics. I have a new blog called The Metaphysical Traveler, which is actually on my website as well. People can link to it there. And I'm looking at not just ghostly experiences, but anything larger, more metaphysical. We talked about angels tonight and everything else, and I'm looking into sort of all those aspects of the spiritual equation of what it means to be a human. And I think that goes on beyond our existence here.
Okay, let's go back to the phones. We'll go to Corona, California, west of the Rockies. Mike, go ahead.
Hey, George. Hey, John. How are you doing? Back in 2006, I think it was, I was visiting my sister. She lived in Las Vegas, and we used to go to this Marie Callender restaurant west of the Strip, about 10 miles up. And we'd go there and eat. We'd just yak all the darn time. And we were the last ones leaving. We paid our bill, and we were walking up to the door, and we noticed it was locked. So we're standing there waiting for somebody to come open the door for us. All of a sudden, out of the corner of our eye, I look over, and the pie room door is open. It's about 10 feet from us. I said, hey, look, Steph, we can take a pie. All of a sudden, this lady walks up, about 80 years old, kind of hunched over, gray haired, walked up. She said, she pointed her finger. She said, you're not supposed to be looking in there. And then kind of smiled, shut the door, walked over and let us out. Well, we got to the car. I thought, man, that lady's kind of grumpy. So didn't think anything of it. Two nights later, we went back there, went in there. And behind the pie room door, which was open at the time, was the picture of Marie Callender, and it was her. And she'd been dead for like 20 years. This is back in 2006 that this happened to us. And so we started questioning the waitresses and waiters there, and they said, oh, yeah, you must have seen Marie, because there's all kinds of noise in the pie room area, pots and pans going off. Even people would quit working there because of that. And so just kind of crazy, you know. And I've seen a lot of ghosts in my time, and this was no ghost. And what's kind of crazy is the picture of her, she's wearing glasses, and this lady was not wearing glasses. So it's just kind of a crazy thing. And me and my sister are both saved, so we don't really believe in ghosts. Didn't scare us, but it says, Stephanie, look at that picture. She says, oh, my God, that's her. That's who we saw last night. So any case, that's my story.
I love it.
And
thanks.
If she wasn't there with me at the time, nobody believed me, but I had my sister there, and this is kind of wild. We've been back a couple times since. And people say, oh, yeah, we hear noises in the pie room all the time, and freaks people out. So,
all right. How do you explain things, John, like I saw my grandmother at the foot of my bed at the moment she died someplace else?
Yeah, yeah. There is sort of these premonition-type ghost events, which aren't really – they're not true ghost events in the sense that it happens like at the moment of death, but – again, I think it's part of the psychological attachment that we have to people that we love, that we care about. Consider it telepathy. Consider it something along those lines. But when it happens like that at that moment, you know, it would not technically yet be a ghost experience. Afterwards, of course, if you continue to see your grandmother, then you've got maybe something else going on. But I think this is all part of the psychology that we talk about, of the mind, the brain, the amazing things that we're capable of doing just naturally, that we sometimes ascribe to, paranormal causes, when in fact it's really abilities that we have all along anyway.
Let's go to Knoxville, Tennessee. Josh, east of the Rockies. Hey, Josh, good morning.
Hey, guys. How y'all doing?
Good. Thank you.
Hey, I
appreciate y'all doing the show tonight. I'm sitting here thinking about this, and I really think we're foolish if we limit ourselves to one reason that people see ghosts or ghosts remain where they are. I really like the creatures of energy theory, but I don't think that's the sole answer. But I'll go into my story a little bit.
Sure.
Up here in Knoxville, we have it's sitting right on the side of a lake. It's an old asylum. It was built in about 1865, right after the Civil War, and it was open until the late 30s, right about the time they dammed up all the rivers around here with TVA. And at this asylum, the inmates, whatever you will call them, would work on a farm and would be buried in a cemetery that actually sits now beneath what is the lake. And when I was a kid, we would always go down and kind of explore this place. I mean, for decades, people said it was haunted. And we went down there, and you had the typical experiences that cause a place to be considered haunted. You have things being moved. You see apparitions. Lights would go on and off. And, you know, I kind of wrote it off. I said, you know, I believe in this kind of thing. I think this exists here. But it wasn't until a few years later, I was out on a boat, and we pulled up probably about 20 yards offshore, so in total maybe 50 yards away from this asylum. And all of a sudden, we see lights flashing beneath the boat, and our power goes out. We call in the TWRA. People come up, and they come out, pull us in. And about a week later, we come out there again, thinking, let's figure out what happened. Same thing happens. And I've sort of racked my mind over this, and the only thing I can conclude is, what I've sort of decided is that when the great roundup of Indians was happening, the Trail of Tears, what was happening was that the United States government knew that Native Americans could communicate with aliens. And so they brought them to this asylum as a cover-up to interrogate them and torture them. And when they were done, they would bury them in the inmate cemetery. And what I think I was on top of was an alien graveyard.
Jeez.
And have you all ever noticed maybe a situation where alien ghosts and human ghosts kind of interact? And if so, do they share the same afterlife? Is there that kind of connection between us?
Wow.
Now that's new to me, John.
I see. That's a very interesting question. I mean, I'm not much on aliens. I don't know a whole lot about aliens, but, you know, we talked about before just how wide the universe is. Are there other forms of afterlives? Are there more than one? I mean, sure. Why not? I think it's possible. On the other hand, it's probably equally possible that everything that's alive, whether it's alien or Earth or Earthling or whatever, maybe we all do share the same afterlife somewhere, too. I mean, I don't know. But that whole idea of alien and ghost interaction is interesting. I don't know what to say about that too much because I haven't had that experience. But it's certainly an interesting question.
Do you think, John, that this quest to find out whether ghosts exist will ever get to the point that we can prove it beyond a shadow of a doubt?
I don't know. Beyond a shadow of a doubt, maybe not. But I do think that there are so many people seriously investigating it today. There are so many new avenues of technology. Our knowledge of the universe, as we said, in terms of, you know, quantum physics and other understandings, is becoming more and more, it's becoming deeper. So do I think that we can get to an answer? I think it's possible. Maybe not beyond a shadow of a doubt, but I think we can certainly get a lot more evidence and come closer to it.
Let's go to Kathleen in Wichita, Kansas. Hi, Kathleen. Go ahead.
Good morning, men.
Morning.
John, I have a question for you. In the beginning of the show, you were talking about your five theories, and you spoke a little bit about your spiritual beliefs. And I have to say, I agree with you on most everything you've said, which is rare because I love to disagree. But it kind of got me thinking about the Virgin Mary and where she fits into the equation because, you know, for a couple of reasons. You know, supposedly in Fatima in 1917, she appeared to three children. And you have multiple people experiencing the same apparition / ghost, you know, on multiple occasions repeatedly. And supposedly today, there are six people in Medjugorje who, you know, are seeing the same ghost slash apparition who's giving them predictions, I guess you could say. I mean, what's your opinion on that? And, you know, multiple people experiencing the same thing, you know, somebody who's significant as supposedly the Virgin Mary. And I'll take my question off the air.
Yeah, that's a good question. A friend of mine actually wrote a book years ago about the visitations of Mary all around the world, including the ones that she just mentioned. And, you know, I think that's a tough question to answer, because somebody like the Virgin Mary is so well established in our iconography, in our traditions, our Western traditions, you know, thousands of years, that almost anybody can imagine or visualize, let's say, an image of the Virgin Mary. I can put one in my mind right now and say, okay, I can see her in my mind. So does that mean, because it is such an established figure, that, again, if you are devout and in a psychological frame of mind where you are meditating or you really want to see the Virgin Mary, do you then see her? But then, you know, how do you do it with a lot of people? Is that mass hysteria, which is possible? Or is there really appearances by something that is something spiritual that we call the Virgin Mary that's being seen around the world? I don't think there's a good answer for that. But, you know, she's not the only figure. I mean, in other cultures, too, there are figures that appear all the time to people as well. And it's not the Virgin Mary. It's some other, you know, spiritual figure. So it seems to be happening internationally around the world. And the question is, again, is it actual event that's happening, or is it just devout meditation, psychological states of mind that puts us in there? And I don't think we'll get the answers to that yet.
Tell me why you kind of negate spirituality with your ghost probing.
Well, I guess I need to clarify that. I don't.
You seem to.
Yeah, and I'm really not negating spirituality, because I do. I mean, I'm on my own personal spiritual quest, and I'm looking at a lot of different religions and a lot of different theories while I'm doing this. So, I'm not opposed to that. I guess what I get a little upset with, maybe, or agitated with is some of the rigid dogma that I hear, where everything is the work of the devil or the work of God, and, you know, it's angels and demons, and I know so many people who are so oriented towards that way that it becomes a narrow view. It doesn't allow for other perspectives, doesn't allow for other possibilities other than the theological. And I guess that's my real argument, is just being so narrowly confined. Because certainly I think there's spirituality. I think we all have spirituality. I think there are spirits, you know, however we define them, I think they're there. So I'm not opposed to that, but I'm opposed to that real rigid theology that constricts you.
Tyler, truck driving in Ohio, first-time caller. Go ahead, Tyler.
Hey, I was a student at Glenville State College. I was in a private room at a place called Pickens Hall. It's the dormitory up there, and I actually had experience with the ghost up there called Marble Boy. And I didn't know...
Marble Boy?
After I had told some friends about what had happened to me, it seemed to be common knowledge up there, so I researched it. It was a little black or African-American child named Jeffrey that had fallen down a flight of stairs, and he was trying to play with marbles. But anywho, I had been in my dorm, and I kept hearing something drop and roll across the floor of the tile floor. And I didn't know, and I had told some people, and they made the mention that it could be Marble Boy, and then I heard it, and it freaked me out pretty good. I spent the rest of the night doing laundry outside my dorm room, and I finally got up enough courage during the midterm exams to tell him that I was really tired, and he didn't need to bother me, and it quit. And it would pick up from then, just time to time. I'd hear him rolling the marbles across, and you could never see anything. I kept checking to see if there was something falling off the hanger or anything in my closet. And the very last night I was up there, you know, I was pretty well convinced that I wasn't completely crazy. And I went and got myself a marble and told him I had to go and I wasn't going to be back. And I rolled the marble across the floor, and it stopped halfway across the dorm room floor and rolled back to me.
How about that?
Yeah.
You know, I had a similar experience in Illinois. I was in a bar called Mother McCree's, and it was supposed to be haunted, and there was supposed to be a little girl that played with billiard balls up there in the pool table upstairs. And I went up there, and one of the waitresses who had seen this child actually took the billiard ball, and she said, "Let's see if she'll play." And she sat it down on the floor, and this ball rolled. It rolled right. It was slowly rolled across the floor, right to my feet, and then it stopped, and then backed up, and rolled a couple inches back.
And backed up. That's amazing.
Yeah, and then forward again, and then did like a little circle right in front of my feet. And I just stood there and watched this thing happen. And she said, "Well, see, she likes to play with it." So those things do happen. They're quite amazing when they do happen.
When people see things darting around, you know,
right,
just things like that, but you know there's something there.
Right.
What is that?
Well, you know, there's something that I've kind of called corner ghosts, when you sort of, you know, you have your vision directed in one, you know, usually forward, but then out of the corner of your eye, you catch like a quick flash of something, like glimpse or something,
yeah,
fly by. And, you know, the minute you turn to look, it's gone. You don't see it. And what I think happens then, I'm not 100% sure about this, but there's some theories that ghosts or spirits are visible in an infrared range of light, which we don't see. You know, the humans don't see it. However, from what I understand, there is a thin little band around the cornea that allows us some glimpse, just a little bit, into the infrared range in your peripheral vision. Well, if that's the case, if you put those two theories together, that ghosts exist in the infrared range, and if we do have some visibility in the peripheral vision like that, that would explain seeing something out of the corner of your eye. And then, of course, the minute you turn and look straight on, you're not seeing it because it's not peripheral anymore. But you may actually have caught a glimpse, perhaps, of what I kind of call corner ghosts. So if anybody has information on that, I'd be interested to hear about that, because it's kind of a theory that I'm...
Corner ghosts.
Yeah, corner ghosts out of the corner of your eye, yeah.
Where did we get your books, John?
Well, they're available pretty much anywhere. Amazon.com, any of the online vendors, Barnes & Noble. They're in all the bookstores. They're in Borders and not Borders anymore, I guess, but Barnes & Noble and all the major bookstores. They're easily gotten.
Now, what's the title of the third book?
Well, the third one is actually the most recent one is what we're talking about tonight, Ghost Hunters. But I have a new one coming out in a couple of weeks, which is a follow-up to my original Ghost Hunting Ohio.
Okay.
Ghost Hunting on the Road Again.
That's your Willie Nelson book, right?
Yeah, it's my Willie Nelson book. And then the first two were Ghost Hunting Ohio and Ghost Hunting Illinois.
I guess you could ghost hunt in any state, couldn't you?
You can. And in fact, I edit a series called America's Haunted Road Trip for Clarissy Press. And we do have state books. Every fall, they come out with three or four new books of the state. So there's a whole series. Yeah, you can.
So there's not one more haunted state than the next?
Well, you know, I have to be partial to Ohio, since I've written two books here, and I think it might be, you know, but I don't know. It's hard to say.
I would say Pennsylvania has a great shot, too. Let's come right back, John, and we'll take final phone calls with you on Coast to Coast AM. Well, she was out of town last month, out of the country and at a conference, but she's back tomorrow, Linda Moulton Howe, with stories of high strangeness on Coast to Coast AM. And let's come back and take your final questions and stories as we talk with the ghost hunter John Kachuba on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast to Coast. I'm George Norrie. We're with John Kachuba. We'll take your final phone calls and stories. I'll always remember, John, a phone call we got from a police officer, and they were summoned to a house, apparently a heart attack victim. They knocked on the door. A little old man opens the door. They see the body of another little old man lying on his stomach. They go up to him. They turn him around. It's the little old man who opened the door.
Oh, man.
How does that happen?
George, I don't know. I have to leave it at that. I don't know how that happens. But, again, you know, I guess a premonition type thing.
What's the strangest ghost story you've ever heard?
The strangest ghost ever?
Yeah. There's got to be one that sticks out that just goes, oh, my gosh.
I don't know. I think that's how to say. I got to think about that one. Let me see. Well, I think probably one of them is the one that I've heard from a place, again, actually in Ohio, called the Collingwood Arts Center up in Toledo. And they had something that they were calling Shadow Man, which was basically a black silhouette of a human figure that they were seeing in the basement. And what I thought it was interesting with here was that the artists who were living in this residence, it was an artist residence and sort of display place, were seeing this thing in the basement. It used to be an old school, Catholic school, staffed by Ursuline nuns, and the nuns had long since left, and these artists had moved in and everything else. But I went up there to investigate it, and I felt this thing in the basement myself. I walked through an area where it was very dark, and I felt like just almost like static electricity, like the air got very heavy, very thick, and I couldn't see anything. It was all darkness, but I felt this incredible sense around me. And when I talked to people later on, they said, well, that area was where they had seen Shadow Man. But the story that I liked most than anything was, after I left there, the director of this place called me and said, you know, we had some visitors come about a week after you left, and they were some elderly women, and they identified themselves as retired Ursuline nuns who had taught at that facility when it was a college many, many years ago, a girls' school. And she said, you know, he said that he took them on a tour around the building because they wanted to see what it was like and everything else. Now, these nuns had not been in this building for probably 20 years, if not maybe longer. They didn't talk to any of the artists or anything else like that. They just came to see the place, and they were oohing and aahing about how nice the building looked now. As they left, the director said to me, one of them stopped and said, by the way, is the shadow still in the basement? This is 25 years later. So, he said, well, what are you talking about? Of course, they said, well, we used to see this black figure walking around in the basement. They identified it. They said it was one of their fellow sisters who had actually committed suicide as a young novice, that she hung herself in the basement. Yeah. But the amazing thing that I like about this story is that you had these artists who had not had any contact with these former nuns, of course, and the former nuns had no contact with the artists. And yet here you are over a gap of 25 years of both groups experiencing the same phenomena down there, the Shadow Man, as they were calling it. So that really just, I mean, that was great. And that's about as much corroborative evidence as you're ever going to get in a ghost story, you know.
I had a call once where the guy in his basement saw a whole troop, a whole legion of Roman centurions marching through his basement. But they didn't have legs. They were just, waist high and ghostly. And, I mean, just weird stuff. Gettysburg gets a lot of stories, doesn't it?
Yes, Gettysburg does. A lot of the battlefields, Gettysburg particularly, and probably because it's just such a famous Civil War battlefield, but almost any battlefield, you know, is probably ripe for these kinds of events. As we talked earlier, you know, residual hauntings from the sheer emotional and traumatic conflict that happens in these places.
Isn't it true that in Philadelphia, if you sell your house, you must disclose there's something to check off on the real estate forms? You've got to disclose if the house is haunted?
Well, you know, I don't know specifically about Philadelphia, but I do know in my Ghost Hunters book that I have a whole chapter about buying haunted real estate. And there are states that require that you acknowledge that, yes, your house is haunted, or as they say...
Isn't that great?
Yeah, as they say, psychologically impacted is the word.
Now, isn't that the proof of the existence of ghosts? If a state says and mandates you've got to do this?
Well, it gets better than that, because there was a case in New York State where people bought a house from a woman, and she had been advertising it for many years as being haunted. It was on a haunted tour. Now, these people from out of state, they didn't know that. They bought the house. When they moved in, they had all these phenomena going on, and they said, oh, my God, our house is haunted. So they sued the lady because they sold her a house under, as they were saying, false pretenses. It was haunted, and she didn't tell them. It went to court, and the court in the state of New York found in favor of these people who were suing the lady. But the only way they can find in favor was the judge de facto had to say, ghosts exist. Otherwise, how could he say the house was haunted and award it to those people?
Good point.
Yeah, so you have a legal case where ghosts exist.
Let's go to Anna, 14 years old, has dad's permission in Arizona. Hi, Anna.
Hi.
What are you doing up so late?
Listening to your show. We do every night until we fall asleep.
Well, that's great. Well, you got school starting pretty soon, too, don't you, next week?
Yes.
Okay. Then you can't stay up late anymore. So take advantage of it. Go ahead.
I've had many run-ins with a ghost, but one of my most memorable ones was when I was about 9 years old. We lived in Nebraska in this, 29 population town. And I was sitting in the park with my mom drawing, and I heard this boy's voice next to me. He kept bugging me, what are you doing? And I kind of ignored him at first, and I could see him from the corner of my eye. He was fading a little bit. And finally, I kind of got mad and shouted at him to stop, and my mom looked at me all confused. Well, after that incident, I kept seeing him day after day. He'd ride the bus with me to school and back. And there was this cross at the bottom of this tall hill, and I didn't know very much about it.
Mm-hmm.
But I would talk to this kid. He doesn't say much, and he always wore, a cap. He was a few years older than me, a yellow shirt, and some shorts.
Did anybody else see him, Anna, or just you?
Just me. My mom, though, talked to me about it and, asked me questions and stuff. And I decided one day that I was going to draw a picture of him so that she could see what he looks like. And I drew his cap, the yellow shirt, and his shorts. But I drew him riding a skateboard at the bottom of this tall hill. And I guess I told my mom that that's where he died, and that's why that cross is there.
Oh.
Well, my mom went and asked his parents, apparently, who died there. And they said that he died at the bottom of that hill skateboarding, and a car came down the hill too fast.
Oh, my gosh.
Wow.
Now, do you see him anymore?
No. After that, he started not following me off the bus or anything. He just faded away.
That's a great story, John.
It is. And you wonder.
Thanks, Anna.
You wonder what the reason was. You know, for some reason he was attracted.
That's a great story.
Yeah, oh yeah, it really is, and yeah, it's amazing.
And you know, once they acknowledged that he had died, and they figured out how he died, he seemed to be he was in comfort, and he left.
Right, that's what I was saying. He must the attraction that he had for her was somehow maybe to get that message out or something, and then. She was no longer needed, and so he could go on to where he went.
What about, there's a story of a little girl who kept telling her parents that she had a little friend who died in the house, and her bones were buried underneath the wooden planks, almost like telltale heart.
Yeah.
And sure enough, after, she was telling her this, they had the planks dug up and ripped up. And there were the bones of this little girl who had apparently been killed and stuffed down there.
Gee. Well, the thing with children, too, is they don't have the social blinders yet that we put up, so they don't know sort of what they can say and not say, or what they can see and not see, if you understand what I mean, so they're innocent. And when they frequently talk about their little invisible playmates and everything, which is very typical for children, they may actually be in contact with something. But as we get older, we say, oh, no, that can't be, So we block all that out. But they haven't learned that yet. They haven't learned to put up those blinders that society sort of requires. So they're innocent. And they talk about all these experiences they're having, that they are truly having, that the rest of us just kind of, dismiss out of hand as, you're silly. You're just talking.
We'll go to Pittsburgh now. Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Rio's with us on Coast to Coast. Rio, go ahead.
Hi, George and John.
Hi.
Hello.
I wanted to share experience with you guys, and then, of course, questions to follow. My brother passed away March 4th, and it was actually the morning of the 15th. I was on the phone with my sister. I was on my cell. She was on my mother's landline, and my brother's cell phone was charging. And while we were talking, his cell phone started indicating that it was doing something, and my mother thought somebody was calling. And when they picked it up, she didn't understand. When my sister took a look at the phone, it said it was sending a text message to my landline at home. And we thought that was strange because nobody was touching his phone. Shortly after that, my husband called me at work to tell me that we just received a message saying that we received a text message from the number. And he said, do you recognize the number? I said, yeah, that's my brother's cell phone. I still had that message on my machine. I won't erase it. Well, that was the first thing that happened. On the morning of August 10th, I was talking with two of my sisters. We were three-way calling. And just after 1 o'clock in the morning, we got quiet there in the middle of our conversation, and my brother's voice came through. Mm-hmm. When my brother passed away, he was on a trach, so he had that, you know, froggy-sounding voice. But he came through really clear, and he said twice, you know, he just said, like, he was calling our mom. She was his caregiver. He said, Mom, Mom. And my one sister responded first and said, ooh, she said, don't do that. And we were all shocked, and as we started pointing the finger at each other that who was playing a game, he came on again and said three more times the same thing. He said, Mom, three more times. And ever since then, we have been so puzzled. I've been searching about where is my brother and how come he came through like that. My question to you is, John, what do you think about that? And second, what experiences do you have with cell phones? Because my husband shared this with one of his coworkers, and she also said that she thought her mother was trying to contact her through her cell phone.
Hmm. Well, you know, there's certainly cases. I mean, cell phones are obviously what everybody's using today.
But it's the new technology for ghosts.
Yeah,
huh?
Well, exactly. And, I mean, you know, he would have used it in life, so it's what he would have, you know, used after. It's not uncommon to get phone calls like that. That's a pretty common thing, although the ones I've always heard in the past have been on the old dedicated landlines, you know, but there's no reason why, because it is technology now, that somebody wouldn't be doing it through a cell phone. So there might be some contact being made there. And the other calls, when it was with your sisters together and you actually heard his voice, that's really very interesting. And you have to wonder if there's something that he's trying to get across, that if he's either just indicating that, you know, he's okay, or if he has something more to say to you. That I don't know. You know, you and your sisters would probably have a better idea of that, but it sounds like there's definitely communication going on here.
There seems to be a need sometimes for these ghosts, these apparitions, to truly contact us.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder why.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think part of it is simply to maybe say, you know, look, don't worry about me. Don't feel sad. I mean, I'm okay. I'm in a better place. I think that's part of it. On the other hand, too, there might be something that they again have unfinished. You know, even if it's an emotion or a thought, just to say, you know, hey, I love you, or you know, I'm okay, or whatever it might be. I think there's sort of final words sometimes that people want to get across.
And let's take some final calls. Omaha, Nebraska. Dan's east of the Rockies. Good morning, Dan.
Hey, good morning. I got a basement ghost story for you guys.
Okay, sure.
Okay, back in about 1977, I was about 3 years old, and it was just my mom and I, and we moved into a duplex in Midtown Omaha. And I remember my mom, you know, she talks about this here and there. She, you know, the first problems were, you know, she heard her name through the vents. So, you know, it just kind of, you know, progressed from there where she started hearing footsteps going up and down the basement steps. Initially, my mom called the cops. Apparently, the canine unit came out. This is what my mom said, and the dog would not go downstairs. So there's been other repeated stuff that happened, and I remember hearing the footsteps. And, you know, as a little kid, my mom would go, boo, boo, and bese. You know, she just, you know, trying to talk, you know, kid talk. And I remember hearing them. Well, she had a medium come in, and the medium went downstairs and said, there is something, and I'm going to quote this, evil down there. And needless to say, you know, my mom kind of sloughed it off, said, whatever. And she, I don't know, it just progressed worse and worse. And, you know, she kept hearing more voices of her name and more footsteps. And pretty much, you know, my mom just packed me and some belongings up and left everything downstairs. And now, you know, the past 8 years, her and my stepfather have been getting really weird stuff at their house. I mean, they hear like the basement door slam when there's nobody home, footsteps. My brother-in-law heard a rocking chair rocking, and I don't know. I mean, that's just kind of weird stories, but I do remember that, you know, being 3 years old, hearing, you know, the footsteps going up and down the steps. And there was no one there.
That's always strange, isn't it? Especially when you're half sleeping, John, and you hear someone creeping up the steps.
Yeah.
Not a good feeling.
No, it's not. I just got finished watching Paranormal Activity a couple of days ago.
Yeah.
I've seen it before. And you know, and you, the same thing, the steps up, you know, the door open, slamming. And, yeah, it's a very creepy thing. But what I was concerned about in that story that this gentleman just said was the fact that it seemed like whatever it was actually going with the family, it seemed like, from one
house. Yeah, and that happens quite a bit. John, your websites, put them up for us, would you?
Sure, www.johnkachuba.com. It's J-O-H-N-K-A-C-H-U-B-A. And my books are on there, my tour schedule's on there, so people can get that. They can contact me directly through there. And also my blog, The Metaphysical Traveler, is listed on there as well, too.
Super. All right, my friend, you take care of yourself. Always a pleasure talking to you, John. John Kachuba, his book, the one we're talking about tonight, Ghost Hunters, on the Trail of Mediums, Dowsers, Spirit Seekers as well. For Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Ladasur, Stephanie Smith, Ross Mitchell, George Knapp, Ian Punnett, and Art Bell, I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.